Buketov World. Today's Daf and Masechet Zivachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is Daf Lamed Hey. And we've got a middle of a sugya we're still working on over here. And let me remind you what happened. So yesterday, we raised the issue of whether dam should become dachui, which would mean it's unusable for anything except dumping into the ama, which essentially is the drain. And we asked, why wouldn't the cases in the Mishnah be considered to be dochui? And we said those cases, like where you put it in the wrong hand, after you did it in the right hand, you put it in the wrong kli, after you did it in the right kli, it's on those cases, that we explained that since it's possible to be mitakein, it's not considered to be dochui. And our raya was that Rabbi Yehuda, who was the real pillar of those who held that dichui is actually a valid concept, and that once that dam would be unusable, it should actually be nifsal. We brought a beautiful raya that very same Rabbi Yehuda indeed holds that where it's in your hands to be mitakein, that it's not considered to be nitchem. What was the raya? Well, it turns out that on Erev Pesach, the ama was pakuk. So they put in a closure to the pipe. What was it? A pipe is like really an open ditch. That was, you know, one ama. And it went through the Beis HaMikdash, and everything that was on the floor would run out. Every once in a while, they would like flush everything out from the Azara. But like this, any dam that was nifsal was simply poured in there, would run out, and they would sell it for gardening and so on. But anyway, here, Erev Pesach, they would plug the ama so that there was no way for the blood to go out. And the blood of all of these karbonas would stay on the floor. And then at the end of the day, after they had like a half a foot of blood on the floor, they would take one cup of that blood, says Rabbi Yehuda, and they would pour it on the Mizbeach. Why? Because if any of the dam of the Pesachim had fallen on the floor, this way they would be machshir it by putting it on the Mizbeach, and at least one molecule of that dam would certainly have, from all the karbonas, end up mixing. And so because of that, it would be machshir. How could it be machshir if it fell on the floor? Wasn't it dochui? Apparently, because it was biyadai to be mitakein, it's not considered to be dochui. That was our raya. Anyway, but meanwhile, we left a lot of questions hanging about the logistics of that type of thing. So we're really five lines up to going back into Rabbi Yehuda from the bottom of the Daf and Amud Beis. Gufa. Let's take a look once again more closely at what Rabbi Yehuda said. Rabbi Yehuda omer kos echad hayah memaleh midam ha'tarovet. They would fill up one mizrak to put on the mizbeach. Why? Because im yishafech echad mihem nimtzeh shu machshiro. That way, in the event that some of that blood was from a cup that was dropped and it never got to the Mizbeach, this way it would get to the Mizbeach and that would be machshir. Amru lo l'Rabbi Yehuda, so the Chachamim said to Rabbi Yehuda, well, how can you be machshir dam that was not in a kli? The dam fell from the actual neck. You can't be ma'asif that from the Ritzbah, according to anybody, remember? So how can you do that? Halo lo nitkabel b'kli. What do you mean, lo nitkabel? How do they know? What are you talking about? This is not referring to a specific event. Rabbi Yehuda was saying, do this every Erev Pesach. So, how could you do that? It didn't fall. What didn't fall? Nothing fell. What are you talking about? No, obviously, what they mean is, how could you do that? Maybe the dam that you're taking was not from a kli. Maybe it was directly from the neck, and that means you had dam pasul, and the dam pasul was mixed in here. How are you allowed to do that anyway? You're not going to be able to be mechaper with dam. What they meant was shema lo nimskabel b'kli. And Rabbi Yehuda answered them, and he said to them, omar lahem, afani lo amarti elokishim nikabel b'kli. Well, obviously, I'm only talking about a case where all the dam was nimskabel b'kli. What? But how does he know? I don't understand. We're talking theory. And he's saying, well, I'm only talking about a case where it was this guy. There was no case. What's going on over here? So what is, who asked for me? No, Yada. No, it's a svara. Rabbi Yehuda says like this. What are the chances that a Kohen shechted and was not mekabel adamer, that a kohen was standing by the Yisrael who was shechted, was not. It's impossible. Why? Because kohanim is rizimim. So since the kohanim are always like on edge, they're ready to respond, there's no, it's just not a reasonable chashash. On the other hand, remember what goes on over there in the Beis Hamikdash Erev Pesach, right? So you're bringing like 100,000 korbanos. You've got 1,000 kohanim lined up in a early version of Ford's assembly line, in which everybody's passing, one coin passes to the next coin. I mean, things are moving. I mean, they're really moving. And remember, according to the Amar, also Lachash Shalom Beregel, it's got to be, they're not just moving, man, they're dancing. I mean, 1 foot in, 1 foot back, take the dumb, move it. I mean, this is, if one guy loses his rhythm, I got rhythm, you got rhythm. And what if one of those guys loses the rhythm? Pow, he loses the cup. And then the cup drops. Now that's possible because since they're avdin haya, they are working on the high. They're going very, very fast. And therefore that's possible that one of the cups dropped. So that could be mishtapchim. Okay, say the chachomim. But there's certainly blood that continues to drip from the animal onto the floor. That's called dam tamtzit. Remember, only dam hanefesh is roy for kapara. Dom that's just coming out of capillaries and so on, that's pusel. And therefore, once the spurting blood is over, that dom is not really called dom. You're not chayev, let's say, if you would eat that dom, you wouldn't be chayev kares. So how could you put it onto the mizbeach? You have now pusel dom that's mixed in it. Ah, that's not a problem, because we're talking about Rabbi Yehuda, remember? Rabbi Yehuda shita is, like we spoke about, Dam Tamsit is also called Dam. Remember, this was a machlokes, the Tanya. Dam Tamsit. So according to the Chachomim, Dam Tamsit is actually only with an Isser La. So it's Ba'azara. Masha Enkein, Rabbi Yehuda always said that it's Bekoris. This we learned in Masechet Kritut. So therefore, since Rabbi Yehuda Shita holds that Dam Tamsit is real Dam, that would explain why it doesn't passel B'tarovet. No, wait a second. Didn't Rabbi Elazar explain that Rabbi Yehuda was only saying that Dam HaTamtzit is real blood legabi the chiyev, but he's made that it's not called blood to be mechaper because the Torah specifies Dam HaNefesh yechaper, and Dam HaTamtzit is obviously by definition not Dam HaNefesh, right? So even Rabbi Yehuda's moda that vis-a-vis kapara, which is what we're talking about over here, being able to put it on the Mizbeach, it is not mechaper, and therefore it should passel. Shenema ki adam hu ba nefesh yechaper dam shanefesh yotzaba koridam. Only dam that is spurting out, which is the end of the ability of this body to support the animal's life, that's called dam. But she'ina nefesh yotzaba eno koridam vis-a-vis kapara. So then what is the point? You're taking blood off of the floor. It's got dam atamsis, and therefore you're not allowed to put it on the mizbeach anyway. It's possible. So what good is it to put the dam on the mizbeach according to Rabbi Yehuda? Whoops. You're right. I forgot. The real reason here is because this is Rabbi Yehuda l'shitato that we're going to have later on in the Masechet, which is that ein dam mevatel dam. According to Rabbi Yehuda, min bemino is not batel. Dam cannot cancel the other dam. And therefore, the dam that is the dam hanefesh, even if there's a lot of other dam that is rove, it wouldn't matter. You could still take that dam hanefesh and put it on the Mizbeach, and that will still be Makshir, the carbon whose dam spilled. Anyway, let me just get back into the argument, because, I mean, this is not directly Nogeas, but, you know, now I'm curious already. I mean, once we mentioned what the Chachomim said to Rabbi Yehuda, let's just look at the rest of the discussion. So the Rabbi Yehuda says to the Chachomim, and look, according to you guys, how do you explain the fact that we actually plugged up the drain? Why do we plug up the drain? According to me, it makes sense. You plug up the drain because you want to be able to utilize this dam. And that was our raya, that as long as it's biyada, as long as it's within your power to be mitakein whatever went wrong, it's not considered to be dichui, right? But according to you, what is the point? Why are we plugging it up to get all this blood here? Leave it open and let the blood just go through the drain. Amrullah, no, you missed the point. The reason that we plug it up is because we want to show the chavivas of the Kohanim. Look at Klal Yisrael, the Kohanim are walking up to their ankles in blood. This is like major. I mean, this is, must have been a million karbanas here. So it's just a very beautiful scene to all of this. Of course, is not for you vegans out there, but for all of those who appreciate the wolf and the binyamin and the predation of the Mizbeach, this is serious predation. What lion wouldn't want to show off all of that amount of blood? Come on, I mean, Kol Shekein the wolf, right? Okay, so therefore they plugged it up just to show the incredible chavivas of the Kayanim walking in blood. What? But how can they walk in blood? Isn't blood considered to be a chatzitza? Remember, you're not allowed to walk with anything between the floor of the Azara and the bare feet of the Kayanim. So if they're walking on blood, why wouldn't that be a chatzitza between their feet and the actual Azara, which would possibly Aveda? No, come on. Blood is wet. We're not talking about dried blood over here. This is fresh blood. That's not a chatzitza. Remember, the Braita explained, Hadam, Vadyo, Vyadvash, Vyachalav, those things, if they're dry, dry blood, dry ink, like the kind of ink in the Sefer Torah, or honey, or milk that forms like a film. That is a chatzitza. But if they're lachin, as long as they're still damp, they're not chotzitzin. Okay, but look, I mean, how can they walk in this without getting the big dekuna filthy? And big dekuna, we learned before, hayubik adav metushtashim, if they were dirty, and the Kohen did the Avodah is actually pasul. So how could they do the Avodah of the Korban Pesach on Erev Pesach if they're walking up to their ankles, and remember, their begadim have to go down to the floor, and that we learned out from Midobad, right? So then they're for sure going to get everything filthy. Now maybe you'll tell me, okay, so then maybe what they do is they pull up the ketonet, and they keep the ketonet high by tightening the avnet, and that keeps it above the level of the blood, but no, that would not be kosher, because Vatanya Mido means it has to be Kemidato, and you're not allowed for it to be not neither too long nor too short. Shaloya Chasar, the Shaloyo Tir, and it has to get directly down to the full floor. So then you're not allowed to lift them. We said before that if you do pull them off, it's as if you cut off the bottom, and now it's not the correct size. Remember, we had that whole discussion back at the beginning of the Masechet. So this still doesn't make sense. How could they do the Avodah walking in blood? No, well, it's not talking about doing the Avodah. It's talking about when they walk. Yes, you're right. It does say it's beautiful to walk in blood, but it's not talking about walking for the halacha of the dam. It's talking about the halacha of the evorim. And the halacha of the evorim, lekevesh, that is not an avoda, remember? Because you could do without that completely, and therefore it's something that you do, but it doesn't require a din of kuhuna. And over there, since it's not an avoda, they were allowed to pull up the big day kuhuna, and you don't need mido kemidato. And they didn't get the begadim dirty. By the way, it's difficult, really. I understand it's difficult to relate to this sheet of walking in blood. But remember, we're talking over here to Westerners who faint if they go into a surgery room, right? They have absolutely no appreciation of biology. They're terrified of biology. The whole inyan of the Beis HaMikdash is to actually bring home and to be so much part of all of nature, red in tooth and claw, which is the essence of evolution, and therefore is the essence of the Binyamin Ze'ev Yitraf, and is the antithesis of the Western human who believes that meat grows in plastic containers in supermarkets. And the whole idea over here is to feel the deep connection to biology. If you are a surgeon, you love that scene. It's actually part of what it is that you're doing, and it's part of what made you want to be a surgeon in the first place. If you're a pathologist, you love cutting up dead bodies because it immerses you in the beauty of biology. Read books by these people, you'll see. I mean, it's literally this same sense. So it's difficult for us to relate to because of the fact that there's so much, ugh, or literally fainting, you know. I mean, the people see a bris mila and they'll faint dead away. I mean, it's some kind of visceral reaction. And this is actually to bring out very much the depth of the love of biology, which is part of the immersion in the process of evolution. So actually, the Gemara is a very important thing to recognize, this Gemara, about the Shevach Ulivnei Aaron. This is what it means to be connected to the world of organisms. And that's the whole point of the Karbonis, is to reintegrate the Adam with the development of life. Okay.
Normally when you step on something, it's a bizarre walking.
I can't hear you. What?
Normally when you step on something, it's a bizarre. To walk on something. To walk
No. You're walking in something. You walk into you walk in the ocean. I mean, people love to walk in the waves. They can't. If you put somebody on the edge of the waves, they'll always walk into the waves, right? They won't stick to the sand unless they don't want to get dirty. But otherwise, they're drawn to walk in the waves. That makes them feel part of the earth, is that they're walking in the water of the waves. Right? It's the same idea over here. Anyway, but how can you say that taking the Ivorim is not an avodah? It says beferish v'ikriv hakohen et hakol hamizbecha, right? So he has to take it v'ikriv on v'iktir al hamizbeach. And we said before that word v'ikriv means holochas Ivorim lekevish. That was the whole mocker that we had way at the beginning, that the concept of v'ikriv is actually holocha. Oh, sorry, you're right. Okay, I didn't mean holochas evorim. I meant the holocha of wood to bring to the ma'arocha, which is fuel. And that's what it's talking about. That's not an aveda, holochas etzim l'ma'arocha. Okay, fine, but meanwhile, they still do have to walk. They're going to have to do the rest of the aveda. How can they do the rest of the aveda if the floor is covered in blood? And they're not allowed to pull up their begadim. So their begadim are going to get filthy. So we're back to where we started. So how do they do the Aveda, the real Aveda? They had itztaboy they had over there. And they made actual binyanim for the occasion, in which they had stones that were connected to the floor itself, and that was shel binyan. And therefore, they actually, when they had to walk and leave the big dekuna down, they walked on a raised floor, so it shouldn't get dirty. And this brings us to one of those very special moments in which our dear Capitan introduces the next Mishnah. Wow. Doc, I think we need some treatment here, Doc. Okay. So remember what we learned before.
Well,
it was that the idea of pigo, whether it's chutz l'zman or chutz l'mekomo, is to eat a dover shedarko le'achol, or to put on the mizbeach a dover shedarko lahaktir, either chutz l'zmano or chutz l'mekomo. But if you are, continues the Mishnah, hashochet et hazevach le'achol dover she'en darko le'achol, if you had in mind to eat something that is not normally eaten, or lahaktir dover she'en darko lahaktir, or something that's not normally put on the mizbeach, then it's not pigo, and it would be completely kosher. But Rabbi Eliezer is posel. So you remember Rabbi Eliezer's shita is, there's a question over here whether Rabbi Eliezer holds this midiraisa or he holds this only midrabbanan, and even though we learned from before the whole mukher, remember, was from Im He'ochol Ye'achel. Remember that wonderful pasuk where we darshened all of the dinim of Pigel, and we started off with the words He'ochol Ye'achel, b'shtei achilot ha'katuv medaber, echad achilat adam, v'echad achilat ha'mizbeach. So one way of understanding that pasuk is that the Torah is making a strong distinction between two different types of achilas. Either it has to be that type of achila, which is roi for human consumption, or it has to be that type of achila, which is roi for mizbeach consumption. But you can't switch the roi for a mizbeach for an adam to be eating, or vice versa. But Reb Eliezer says just the opposite. The Torah is saying, hey, ocho yeachel, in order to compare the two achilas. So it's makish achilas adam achilas mizbeach, and therefore you can be Chashev from one to the other. So there's a question, which we'll get to Bezrat Hashem in Minachot, there's a question of whether he means that midiraisa, that it's really a hekesh, or this is Gzeirat Rabbanan. But the bottom line is that according to Reb Eliezer, it becomes pigel even if the Adam had a machshava to eat something that belongs on the Mizbeach or vice versa. Or suppose somebody did Shchita Lechol Davar Shedarko Lechol, or lahaktir davar shadarko lahaktir, but less than a kezayit. Now, the concept of achila, both of the adam and of the mizbeach, is based on the shear of a kezayit. And if the machsheves pigel was on the consumption of less than a kezayit, then it's also kosher. Because even if you want to put together a chatzi zayit of aktara and a chatzi zayit of achila, even Reb Eliezer is made that in achila v'aktara mitztarfim, as we learned before, and we repeat here to make that clear that this is true even according to Reb Eliezer, who just said that you could be mechashev me'achilas adam l'achilas mizbeach and vice versa. He's made that it's still considered to be two completely different types of achila in terms of tziruf. You can't combine the two. Now, let's take examples. We're talking about things that are part of the korban, but they're not considered to be ra'ui for achila. So let's get a list of those things. This is a list that appears many, many times. And it appears also, we're talking about some of these items in this list. We're talking about Arv HaRotav and issues that are considered to be Oichlin in terms of Kabbalah Stuma. So let's talk about Shchit of the Zevach. And he had in mind to eat a kezayit from the animal's hide, or from Rotav, which is gravy that comes out of the meat, or Min HaKippah. Kippah is when you, it's like soul food. It's when you make a little bit of meat, you don't have much meat, or if you have a lot of meat, it's what settles to the bottom of the pot. So there's a lot of tiny little pieces of meat and spices that gather together, and they make this thick sediment at the bottom of the pot, right? So that is called kippah, but it's not considered to be roi l'achila. Umina alal. Now, alal is one of those things that there are so many pshatim to it. Every Rishon's got a different pshat. So Rashi goes with his pshat all over that alal refers to the actual ligaments in the neck, which are very tough in a mammal, but which are edible in a bird. And so here it's referring to the alal of the neck ligaments. And it's not considered to be edible because it's very hard and thick. Others learn alal is considered to be the little thin little bits of basar that are stuck to the ore on the other side when you do skinning. So there's always a little bit of thin slices of connective tissue, which is really edible, but over here got stuck to the ore. And there's other shitas that alal is what the rofe would actually be cutting down if he needed to cut off to prevent gangrene. So he needed to actually remove the pieces of damaged tissue. Anyway, but whatever the halal of all of the above are not considered to be normal things that people would eat, or min ha'atzamot, if you want to eat bone, or min ha'gidim. Now, gidim, by the way, I mean, even though nowadays kidim specifically mean actual ligaments. It's not what it means in the Gemara. Well, it includes that. But kidim, remember, in the general kind of terminology that the Gemara uses, is any type of a stringy kind of material. So it could include nerves, it could include ligaments, it could include veins, it could include arteries, but any stringy type of material, which is not considered to be edible. Minat karnaim, minat lafayim, so any keratin material, horns, hooves. If his makshava was chutz lizmano, chutz lebekomo, it would be kosher, because it's not considered to be roi l'achila. And if you end up eating them from a carbon that is pigel, not this carbon, which didn't become pigel, obviously it'd be putter, but suppose it was a carbon that was pigel because you had a makshava to eat the carbon, chutzizmano, or bring the carbon, chutzizmano, then those parts of the carbon that you would eat are not considered to be eating meat, and therefore you're not chayev kores for eating pigel. It's a completely separate halacha. So the same way they're not considered to be part of the carbon in terms of becoming, making the carbon pigel, if the carbon is pigel and you eat them, you would not be chayev. And if the carbon was left over after its time, so now it's notar, you would not be chayev. Or if you are tame when you eat these things, you wouldn't be chayev kores because it's not considered to be achilas boser. Hashochetet hamukdashim. Now, when we use the word mukdashim instead of just hashochet, what we're referring to is females. And the big issue with a female is that we can discuss what the din would be about its fetus if it were pregnant, right? So that's why we introduced this by discussing mukdashim specifically. And you had in mind to either eat the actual fetus, or let's call the shlil, or you were going to eat some of the placenta, so its shilia would be eaten b'chutz. You were not mefagel, because those are not things that are considered to be edible and part of the carbon. But let's say you do malika. Now, malika is the equivalent of shchita on birds, but the thing is that the bird, we could start talking about eggs. I mean, what about if you had in Kavana, when you did the Malika on a tor, and your in Kavana was to eat the eggs, which are currently internal, you're going to eat them b'chutz. Chutz izmano, chutz mekomo, lo pigel, because those are not considered to be actually part of the korban. And in fact, if you drink milk of mammal animals that was inside of the animal at the time of the shvita, or you eat the eggs of a bird that was inside at the time of Malika, and the animal was made pigel in the normal way, you would not be chayev on eating, on drinking the milk that had been left over in the udder of the animal, or eating the beitzim that were found inside of the tor. You're not chayev on them, not mishum pigel, not mishum notar, and not mishum tamei. As we said before, there's no chorus for eating them because these are not considered to be an actual part of the carbon. Okay, now comes an extremely important chiddush of Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says, look, we've been talking about things in an overly simplistic fashion, because instead of getting into the gray area about things that might be themselves considered to be food, and the animal itself was pigel. So let's take this case of the shlil, okay? Note the difference in the cases in the Mishnah. We're talking about shochetet hamukdashim, to eat the shlil or the shilya. So we said, well, that's not considered to be part of the carbon. Therefore, you don't make it pigel. Okay. Then we say, what about if you drink the milk of a carbon that was pigel? Hey, wait a second over here. Forget about drinking the milk. What about if you eat meat of the fetus that was found inside and of a carbon that was pigel? You didn't mention that. Why don't you talk about that case? Well, says Rebbe Lozer, that's the gray area. So look, it's true that you cannot make a korban pigel by having in mind to eat the shlil outside of the mokum or outside of the zman. But if the animal itself became pigel, then all of these parts of the animal would be usher to eat as pigel, would not be the same as the cases of the milk and so on. So therefore, if you were mefagel with the carbon in the normal way, then the shlil, which is the fetus, also would be pigel, because then it's part of that same animal. But on the other hand, if you had in kavona, as the Mishnah said, to eat the fetus chutz l'zman or chutz l'makomo, there it would not create pigel, because basically it's true that it may be considered to be edible if somebody goes out to eat it, but it's not considered to be an actual part of the korban lechatchila, because in general it's not something that's eaten. So therefore, we have here a gray area. If you actually made the korban pigel by having a true kavanas pigel about the actual emurim or the actual bosser, then the shalil in that korban is considered to be edible if you go to eat it. And that would become itself the iser pigel. But if you try to make it pigel by having a kavana to eat it, then it would not be mefagel. So we have things that are mitpagel, but not mefagel. Fine. That's a very important distinction. I'll give you other examples, says Rabbi Elazar. Suppose you have a bird. Now, a bird has also alal, and this is why Rashi understands the alal the way he does, which is that it's referring to ligaments in the neck. The alal in a bird is soft. It's not like the alal in a mammal. And you can actually see this from the way that a bird moves its neck, which is very, very different than the way a mammal moves its neck. You try an owl's neck on a cow and you just busted its head off. So the alal of a cow, yes, is definitely tough. But the alal of a bird is not. And there's another part of a bird which is generally not eaten, and that's the mur'ah. So again, the mur'ah is generally understood to be a reference to the crop. Rambam understands mur'ah to be connective tissue. Again, whatever it means, the intent is clear, that if you're talking about a bird, the alal being edible if you want to eat it. So if you were mefagel the alal, so then that creates pigel. And even the mur'ah, which is generally, as I said, the crop, is pigel, because some people will clean out the crop and actually eat it. But the mur'ah, if your pigel was about the mur'ah, which is not considered to be food on its own, that does not create pigel, and therefore the alal itself was not pigel. I'll give another example. You had in kavanah to be mefagel and the emurim of the parim ha-nisrafim. Now, parim ha-nisrafim do not have any edible meat, because all of the basar is taken out and burned. So there's no way to be mefagel with the basar, frakilas adam, but you can be mefagel on the parim ha-nisrafim by being mefagel through the emurim. Well, then, if you go and eat the meat is going to be chayev, like any other meat that became pigel, because the carbon was mefugal. But you can't use the meat to be mefagel. And therefore, if you try to be mefagel a carbon by saying, I'm going to eat the basar of this parim ha-nisrafim tomorrow or outside of its correct place, then the emurim do not become pigel. So basically, we have to clearly distinguish between mifagel and mitpagel. And not always do the two go hand in hand. Now, lechora, we have a brisa that seems to actually say exactly what Rebbe Elazar says. Look what it says over here. Rebbe Shimon and the Rabbanan agree. Now, remember the machlokas we had about Rebbe Shimon and the Rabbanan. Talked about this before. Rebbe Shimon holds that since shlamim is the mucker of all of the dinim of pigel. Any carbon that is not brought al hamizbeach hachitzon kishlamim is not able to be pigel in general, for no matter how you went about it. So the Chachomim disagree with that, but the Braita points out that Rabbi Shimon and the Chachomim end up saying the same thing. If somebody had a makshava to eat the actual meat of the Purim HaNisrafim, or to burn the Purim HaNisrafim outside of the Zman, because burning them is not on the Mizbeach, and that's not considered to be Achilas HaMizbeach. So if you were going to eat from them, it's not Roy L'Achilas Adam, and if you were going to burn them, it's not considered to be Achilas HaMizbeach. And therefore, for all intents and purposes, Rabbi Shimon says, well, anyway, there's no concept of pigul on Purim HaNisrafim. And the Rabbanon say there is a concept, but it still has to be roi for achila, roi for sreifa, lo asav lo klum. So in that, we agree. Now, what does this have to do with Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon? Well, the implication is that my lav, that it's only the actual busser that's not included in pigel. But suppose you would have had a makshava pigel on the emurim of Purim HaNisrafim, which are put on the Mizbeach HaChitzon, then the Purim themselves, the meat, would actually become pigel, at least according to Chachamim. I mean, obviously not according to Rabbi Shimon, holds there's no pigel on this carbon. But according to the Chachamim, it would be pigel. And that's what Rabbi Elazar said. Even though you cannot be mefagel, you can actually be mitpagel. No. Where does it say that? Maybe it just means to say that if you had a makshava of bringing the emurim at the wrong time, so then the emurim become pigel. It doesn't say over here necessarily an implication that the basar becomes pigel. No. Forget it, man. Okay. How about this braita? This braita I'm going to bring you seems to definitely prove Rebbe Elazar. Toshma. Actually, this is a Mishnah. It's not even a braita. The Mishnah Me'ila says, Purim HaNisrafim, Sirim HaNisrafim. So when it comes to Me'ila, okay, the moment that you make them Hekdesh, they are Hekdesh like any other Hekdesh. And if you use them for purposes that are not of the Beis HaMikdash, you're nene from them for yourself, then you're chayev me'ila, carbon me'ila, and you have to pay back hekdesh plus the fine of an extra chomesh, and so on and so forth. So they are all considered to be the same din as kachin kachin. So once you're magdish them, there's a din of me'ila. Now, next step is, you now go and you shech them. The moment that you shech them, they're now kodesh b'kedushas haguf, and they can become pasul now if a tful yom touches them, or if a Mechusar Kippurim touches them, or if you leave them overnight, once they're shechted, then they become pasul belina. Okay, now, does this not imply? It says over here, belina. The lina means the lina of the basar, right? And that means, I mean, it seems to be very reasonable, if this basar, which is talking about the Nisrafim, the Purim Mitzvah Nisrafim, and it's not roi for the Mizbeach. Nonetheless, if you keep the meat overnight, it's going to be pasul belina. So then, in all the other cases where we had a psul lina, you could also have a psul, a virtual lina. What's the word for virtual lina? Pigel, chutz lezmano. Pigel, chutz lezmano is virtual lina. So then, it's mashma that if it becomes pasul belina, it would become pasul with the makshavas lina and pasul b'makshava, which is exactly what Rebbe Elazar says. You cannot be mafagel with this meat, but you can be mitpagel, the meat, and therefore in eating the meat, it would be chayev for lina, so to speak, namely pigel chutz lezmano. Nah, doesn't mean that. It refers to the lina of the emurim. Well, now, wait a minute. Look at the continuation of that Mishnah. It says, all of those, Purim and Seirim and Nisrafim, your Me'ila Mehem, you continue to be over on Me'ila, even if they're already in the Beit HaDeshen where they're going to be burned and their fire is already burning them, you're still going to be Me'il on them if you're Nene from them until it actually turns into carbon. Achiyutach HaBasar, it has to be complete ashes, right? Actually, well, it's enough really for it to just get carbonized. But anyway, That's talking about Basar, obviously, if it's in the Beit HaDesh, and Neimurim were put on the Mizbeach. So apparently this Mishnah is referring to Basar, which if the end of the Mishnah is referring to Basar, so the beginning of the Mishnah talks about Lina is probably also talking about Basar. Okay, come on, cut out the probably, okay? Me, the Ira probablys are considered to be a proof to you. You got two different cases in the Mishnah. Each one is talking about its own context. Hakidi ita. The Reish is talking about the Imurim, because only the Imurim are Shaykh Talina. And the Sefer is talking about Me'ila, and that's talking about Basar. This has, come off it. This has nothing to do with Rebbe Elazar. Okay, well, you know, if you can't prove him, how about if we disprove him? Heck, I mean, you can't fight him. You might as well join him. So we haven't been able to fight the Chachamim by proving Rebbe Elazar. How about if we now disprove Rebbe Elazar? Motiv Rabba. Take a look at this braita. Ve'elu she'ein mifaglin ve'ein mitpaglin. Now this makes very clear. No pigol, not as the mifagel and not as the mitpagel. So we're talking about wool that's on the head of these lambs, kvasim, or the hair of the tayashim, so goats, the male goats have a sort of beard, so it's se'ar shebizikan tayashim, or the cases that we had before, ha'or, ha'rotav, ha'kipa, ha'alal, ha'mur'a, ha'atzamot, ha'gidim, ha'karnaim, ha'tlafaim, ha'shlil, ha'shilya, and the milk of female mugdashim, or the eggs of birds, beitzei turim. All of these are neither mifagel or mitpagel, and ein chayavin aleihem mishum pigol tamei v'notar. You are not chayav on them in a case where an animal is pigol for eating any of this stuff. And if it is pigol, or it was leftover, or you are tamei betumas haguf, you eat them, you are not chayev, because they're not considered to be edible parts. And if you bring any of these things up outside of the Beit HaMikdash, you're putter, because only things that are roi for the Mizbeach in the Beit HaMikdash are mechayev you for bringing them outside of the Beit HaMikdash. Now, come on, man, this is saying very clearly, lo, mifaglim v'lo mitpaglim. Okay, now that's 100% against what Rebbe Elazar said. He said you have to distinguish between mifaglim and mitpaglim. I mean, I'm assuming that means they are not mifagel the carbon, and they do not become pigol if the carbon did become pigol in the proper way, which is exactly anti-Rebbe Elazar 100%. No, I don't know, not necessarily. Rebbe Elazar can explain this very simply. They're not mefaglin the zevach, and not only are they not mefagel the rest of the carbon, but if you had a kavana to eat these things chutz lizmano, they themselves do not become pigol. Not only do they not cause pigol on the rest of the carbon, but they don't create pigol even on themselves. But if the animal was pigol in the regular way, of a dover shedarka lechol, or through the murim of a dover shedarka lehakter, who's to say that these things would not be pigol? I insist that they are still mitpaglim, along with the rest of the animal. Knew you would say that. But if that's true, how do you explain the repetition? The Braita continues on to say, Kulam lo mifaglim v'lo mitpaglim. Now, why does it repeat it, huh? Why does it repeat it? It repeats it to make it very clear. Don't think I mean only lo mitpaglim machmat atzmam. I mean lo mitpaglim machmat korban. And therefore, it's for sure against Rebbe Eliezer. Oh, excuse me, sir. So you think you've explained everything. Hi, right? I mean, it says the first part, lo mefaglim v'lo mitpaglim. Yeah, that could be Rebbe Eliezer, and it means lo mitpaglim machmat atzmam. Oh, but then it repeats, kulam lo mefaglim v'lo mitpaglim, which Smarty Pants has decided means to tell me not like Rebbe Eliezer. So tell me, how are you going to explain the third mention? Huh? It says again in the Braita, ve'ein chayavin alav mishum pigol noisiv v'tomei. I mean, come on. How many times can you beat a dead horse? I mean, I've already heard lo mitpaglim. Then you repeat it. Lo mitpaglim. Then you repeat it. And you're not chayav if you, come on. So how do you explain that? You're going to have to explain that for yourself. How do you explain it for yourself? Well, obviously, the part that it's repetitive over here is because we were going to talk about you're not chayav on notar v'tame. Okay, so we throw in the other case. You're not chayav for pigol or notar v'tame. Since you needed to teach me the din of notar v'tame, so it mentions pigol. So then that's true about that second repetition. First repetition. This is the second repetition. So the first repetition was needed because it introduced the clause of the Braita that says, V'hamala mehem bachutz pater. So since you're mentioning hamala mehem bachutz, you also re-mention pigo, but it's not to tell me that it's not like Rebbe Lazar. Rebbe Lazar understands this Braita completely. So that doesn't disprove him. Says Rava, you know, the truth is our Mishnah seems to make it clear that he's right, Rebbe Lazar. Take a look, a closer look at that Mishnah, right? We just had Afanami Ananami Tanina. We said Hashochet Atamukdashim. All of a sudden, what happened? We moved on to a discussion when we talked about the females. So we talked about, if you shech the mukdashim, well, we had to talk about females if we want to talk about fetuses, or we want to talk about placentas, obviously. So we said over there, lecho shliya lo shliya bachutz lo pigel. And we pointed this out when we read the Mishnah. And then it says, hamolek et hatorim, lecho beitzehem bachutz lo pigel. Okay, now what's the next piece? The next piece switches to the milk of mammals, and the eggs of birds, and it says, then you're not chayav b'shum pigol nosar v'tamei. Why didn't it mention the first case? Why didn't it mention the fetuses of mammals? Why did it only mention the milk of mammals, huh? I'll tell you why. Because actually, if you would have had a pigol shlil v'shilya, you would be chayav. But you said before you don't become pigol. Oh, that's the point. You can't make pigol by having a kavana of the shil v'shilya, but they can become pigol. El alav shmamina. The milk and the eggs, they don't even become pigol if the bird or the mammal was pigol. But the shlil and the shilya, which are part of the mother, in the event that the mother actually does become pigol, how is that? Through regular pigol. Having a makshava of achilas basar, or having a makshava of haktora chutzis manuchu, that is pigol. So kan machmat atzmam v'kan machmat hazevach, which is exactly what it was the Rebbe Eliezer said all along, shmamina, that he's right. Wow. Okay. Now, we've got a whole other issue, which is somewhat related at the end, as we'll see, and that is the question of im Allah lo teret. Right now, we don't understand why we're bringing this up over here in the middle of nowhere, but it's going to be nogea. So remember that the pasuk in the Torah says, "Vayah mizbeach kodesh kodashim kol anogea b'mizbeach yigdash." So that tells us that even something that should not be put on the mizbeach, if it were on the mizbeach and somebody put it up there, so it was actually on the mizbeach, you don't take it down. Okay. So that's called im ala lo yeret. Now, it says in the Mishnah, this is much later in the Masechet, that in the event that something is a balmum, it's not roy for the Mizbeach at all, and therefore, if you put a balmum on the Mizbeach, you have to take it right off. Whereas Rabbi Akiva says, no, even a balmum is allowed to remain on the Mizbeach. Now, Reb Chiya bar Abba quotes Reb Yochanan as saying, don't think that Rabbi Akiva was saying that any mum at all, what, it's missing a leg, you can leave it on the mizbeach. That's not what he was talking about. He was talking about subtle mumim, such as a dokin sheba'ayin. Now, dokin sheba'ayin are very subtle. You may even need a doctor to distinguish it, according to those who learn that dokin sheba'ayin refer to cataracts. Others understand that it's an actual easily visible growth of skin over the eyes. So you don't need a doctor to look at it, or it might be discoloration, actually, even in the iris. Okay, whatever. But whatever it is, it's subtle. And that's not the type of thing that a bird is nifsal with. A bird is only nifsal on something that's bizyonis to bring. And there it's not nifsal because of mumin, because we're going to see later on there are no mumim ba'ofot, but something that's called mechusar aver, which actually, and that's an iser b'drabanan, because it's based on the extension, and this is a very important extension, which Gavi will take out his magic wand to write down. It's called the posik hakrivehu nale pichatecha. If you bring this to the local governor, is he going to be happy? So that type of thing, which the Navi yells at Klal Yisrael, this is the type of karbonis that you're bringing me. Technically, it's kosher. Yeah, go ahead and try to bring it to Mr. Trump. See if he won't throw it in your face. You're going to send it to me, you know? Okay, so that's a psul because it's disgusting. Okay, so therefore, it would be puzzle even in a bird because of that, but not really mitzad mum. So Rabbi Akiva is saying, look, if a bird could actually be put on the mizbeach lechatchila, it's not noticeable, and it's not an iser v'akriveil na lepechatecha. It's not mechusar aver. So there, since it's kosher with an oaf, so then if it's on the mizbeach already on a mambo and it's subtle, so that's allowed to remain on the mizbeach, but only on condition that first the animal was hegdish, and then it got this mum. But remember, and we had this differentiation before, that there's a difference between things that are mukdash, that become posel, and types of psulim that are chal before the hegdish. So in this case, if the hegdish came first, higdim higdisha et mumah, then it would be allowed to remain, because the hegdish meant that it was roy for the mizbeach at that moment. Then it got this mum. So then if you put it up, it's called mizbeach bekadesh. But if it was never roy for the mizbeach, then it doesn't even have kedushas aguf. So obviously, you don't put something that's chulin, you can't leave on the mizbeach. So to speak, vis-a-vis the mizbeach, it doesn't have kedusha roy for the mizbeach. And furthermore, Rabbi Akiva would therefore be made that if somebody makes a female animal, an oila, now an oila has to be a zohar, and there does not seem to be any bigger mum than being an akiva if you're supposed to be a zohar. And that sort of seems to happen before the hegdish because it was born as an akiva, and therefore Rabbi Akiva would certainly be made that if the animal is an akiva and you try to bring it as an oila and you put it up on the mizbeach, that it would not be allowed to remain on the mizbeach, right? Motiv Rabbi Zera, well, now wait a minute. It says before, remember that bright that we said before, that if you're mala them b'chutz, you're potter. And what was that referring to? The shlil. The shlil and the shilya were in the list of things that if you bring them up outside of the Beis HaMikdash, you would be potter. But isn't that an implying that if you bring them, meaning you bring the fetus up, you're potter? But suppose you would have brought some of the mother's meat and the mother had been made an oila and you brought it up, then from the mother, you would be chayev. Now, the only case that you could have a mother of a shlil, I got news for you, she's got to be a nekeva, believe it or not. I mean, all the confusion nowadays makes no difference. It takes, even ask Trump himself, it takes a woman to have a baby. And therefore, if this oila would be brought b'chutz, you would be chayev, but how could it be chayev if it's an olas nekeva? And you say, well, nobody, even Rabbi Akiva would say, an olas nekeva is not allowed to remain on the mizbeach. Then everyone should agree, if it isn't roy to be mukrav agabei mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash, that you're not chayev on being makriv it out of the Beis HaMikdash. So how do you explain that? So if you're going to tell me that Rabbi Akiva would hold that even a female oila is left on the mizbeach, I can explain this. I could say the Mishnah, this bright is going like Rabbi Akiva. So according to Rabbi Akiva, since it's in a situation where it's totally b'diavad, somebody put it up on the mizbeach, but it's still allowed to remain there. So in that case, if it was actually brought up outside of Beis HaMikdash, it's considered to be, in the broadest sense of the word, roy for the mizbeach. But if you're going to tell me, Amrit, that even according to Rabbi Akiva, it would be taken off of the mizbeach, it's not true according to anybody. So how money? Oh, you're right. Okay, so what the braita means is not hamala mehem b'chutz poter, but mi'imant chayev, but rather hamala mehem b'chutz poter, but if you bring the emurim of the mother, meaning we're not talking about an oila where the mother has meat, there's no such case. We're talking about a shlomim, or we're talking about a chatas, where the mother has meat, because you bring a chatas from a female. You bring a shlomim from a female, so that's perfectly okay. So in such a case as that, then you would be chayav, which of course you would. It's not good with an oila, if we're talking about a chatas. But it doesn't say that. I mean, it says mehen, which means from them, the fetus, and the fetus, mashma, their mother, is the same kind of thing. If the fetus is meat, the mother is meat. Okay, so you have to change it. It means, in the braita, it should say, not hamala mehen, it should say hamala mi emurei, meaning, if you take something that was roiv from this fetus to be on the mizbeach, the emurim, you'd be potter, because it's not really a korban. And then it's true. From the emurim of the mother, if we're talking about a chatas or a shlomim, indeed you would be chayiv, because that would be a aveda b'chutz of something that could be done bifnim. That's all that it means, and therefore it has no relevance to our sugya. Okay, boy, did we learn some new issues today about hakrava b'chutz only being chal on something that is roi bifnim, and we learned the question about the difference between a mifagel and a mitpagel, and a mifagel machmat hazevach, or there's a concept of mitpagel mitnei atzmo, and we learned more about the concept of the im ola tered or im ola lo tered, and we also learned much more than we understood originally about what is considered to be ro'i la'achilas Adam, ro'i la'achilas ha'mizbeach, and the new gray area that Rebbe Elazar taught us today between the two.